Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shift Extension podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and I'm here today with Sonny Whitfield.
And how are you, Nick?
I'm well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Good to see you again. Are you up at Bargara at the moment?
I am. With the family away for a couple of days, so doing a remote podcast, but this is a good topic and I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. We've got a very special guest on today. He's a university student, or paramedicine student from the Gold Coast at Griffith University. And he's also one of the contributors to the Shift Extension publishing platform. He has written a fantastic article, which is going to form the center of our discussions today. So a very warm welcome to Mitch. How are you today, Mitch?
Good, fellas.
Thanks for coming on the show. So Mitch published a article called Good Grief, Bad Grief, which aimed to explore the effects of family presence during CPR. Mitch, firstly, congratulations. And secondly, what motivated you to write on this topic?
Nick. So Steve approached me with the idea of this article, and it made me reflect on a few of the incidences I had on placement. And then after kind of looking into that a bit further, I thought about, hang on, you know, how did this impact the family? And on placement, I asked my mentors, I said, you know, it's kind of weird for me to go to this job and, you know, however the outcome it turns out, and then just kind of turn an eye and continue your day to day, knowing that this family's life's changed forever. So I really wanted to look into that a little bit more and see, you know, the potential benefits or the potential detriment that the family can have when they're involved in a cardiac arrest.
Mitch, you produced this article within a few days, which I was more than impressed with. It was a hot topic for myself from my own experiences. But you're a final year paramedicine student, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And so you've completed several placements out and around about the state?
Yeah. One in the Brisbane Lassen and one up in Harvey Bay.
Okay. During those placements, I'm just curious, the exposure you had to cardiac arrest, did you go to one?
Yeah, I've been to two.
Okay. And I mean, I'd like to explore these if they're not going to cause you any kind of grief, I guess. I think the title's fantastic, Good Grief, Bad Grief. There's nothing often pleasant about going to cardiac arrest from a paramedic perspective. I mean, we may have good outcomes, in which case, you know, often there is, I guess, a feel-good notion to them. But quite often, I mean, I think, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, the chance of actually pulling someone back from out of hospital cardiac arrest is 30% at its absolute best, and it deteriorates from there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, Mitch, you went to a couple, did you say?
Yeah, I went to two, mate. Two in the first one.
Okay. And I'm assuming, based on my own experiences too, that these were vastly different experiences.
Yeah, completely different. One was very, very heightened emotions and kind of crossed that borderline of, is it interfering care? And the other one was very much a calmer situation with different family there.
So it's interesting that you even raise this, and Nick, I'll certainly draw from you with your experiences, but the motivation to even approach Mitch about these was actually based on two relatively close cardiac arrests that I attended. And both, as Mitch said, were vastly different. On one hand, I had family who wanted nothing to do with what was actually occurring. And then the second one that happened reasonably quickly after that, the family wanted to be there. And so from my own perspective as a paramedic, it changed the dynamics of the scene itself, changed the way that I could even interact with my crew members. And this is something that I wanted to explore because on one hand, Nick, we've got, you know, what's going to be best for the family involved. And then on the other hand, we've also got what's going to be best for the paramedics who are involved.
I think we need to reframe the question in a sense, you know, a lot of the literature surrounding the question of should we allow family members to be present during resuscitation, it comes from the hospital. The environment that we work in is generally, not predominantly, generally outside of the hospital. And there's some few very nuances associated with that. For starters, a lot of the time the family members will automatically be present Most cardiac arrests in the area that we work in occur in the family home, and usually a family member has called. So they'll automatically be there when we arrive. It's usually a sudden event. It's unexpected. So that family member may be looking for answers. So naturally, they may be observing what you're doing, wanting to be involved because they're looking to try and rationalize this really challenging situation that they found themselves in. So I wonder whether or not, rather than asking the question, should family members be present, we should probably assume that they're going to be present. Maybe then the question should we be asking is, should family members be asked to leave or be removed from a resuscitation? And that's a very tricky question with a lot of variables to consider.
The reframing of this question is interesting too, because I would actually agree with you. You know, we need to move past the question, should they be present, and actually move forwards into assume they're going to be present, because as you rightly pointed out, paramedics work in a vastly different environment to most healthcare workers in a hospital. Mitch, as a paramedicine student, you were brought a topic to essentially research and write about, and I think you've done a fantastic job. Was much of the literature drawn from the paramedicine aspects of this subject matter, or was a lot of this drawn from hospitals?
The more I dug into it, mate, the more I got interested in it. And I think that's part of the reason why I smashed it out in a couple of days. It just overwhelmed me, the amount of stuff that was out there for it, but the lack of stuff that was out there for us, for paramedic related. So a lot of the times the studies did mention out of hospital cardiac arrest, but the statistics and everything was taken from within an ED environment. And then some studies would look at, you know, post 60, 90 day outcomes of depression, PTSD, and things like that, other variables. But there wasn't anything specific to the outer hospital setting.
So Mitch, if we look at the pros and cons of family members being present during resuscitation, the pros seem to revolve around benefit to the family, and the cons seem to revolve around issues relating to care of the patient. Let's start with some of the potential benefits associated with families being present. Well, what did you find in the literature?
Yeah, I would agree with that you think the family is the main positive outcomes, and I would agree with that as well. So it was found that when family were present, they thought that they were helpful, they brought comfort to the patient, the family member, and it gave them an opportunity to advocate for them as well. There was one study that actually showed 100% of people that were present would do so again. And there were no reports of additional trauma, long-lasting PTSD or excessive depression or anything like that. They also got to play a central role in communication, and they felt like they had closure and a better acceptance about what was going on with their family member.
Steve, do you think there's benefits for the family being present with regards to how you provide care?
When there's been family members present, it's another set of eyes watching you work. And I think, you know, the basic human instinct inside us will give us a little bit more anxiety when we know we're being watched. But at the same time, often, and I'm going to, I guess, support some of the literature that Mitch has been referencing, I've certainly seen a lot of benefit to having family members there. Especially if we're communicating appropriately with them and we're actually bringing them on as stakeholders. From a personal perspective, one of the biggest benefits I've seen from having family members present is if we are recognizing that the resuscitation attempts are going to be unsuccessful, it's actually communicating the family and giving them an opportunity to say goodbye, which is, you know, I mean, that's a huge thing. This is a life-changing moment for people. So from my own personal perspective, that's been one of the larger benefits of it. But certainly as a clinician operating, it's one thing to speak in front of two people. It's another thing to speak in front of 100. No matter where or what you work as, I think when you have people around watching you, it does create a little bit more of an anxious environment. It does inflate the nerves slightly. But, hopefully, as anyone who's working in the paramedic industry, within the paramedicine environment, I don't want to use the word gets used to this, but certainly learns to adapt to it. So for me, I've seen a far more benefit to having family members on scene than I've seen detriment. But, I mean, we haven't discussed the detriments yet, have we?
No, and we'll get into that in a moment. there's some other benefits I can attest to personally, like having the family there to be able to offer some patient history, having them present to start to build that rapport and to build that trust between the paramedic team and the family. That can make a huge impact when or if you need to have a difficult conversation with them, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes down the line. And then having their family present, if let's say it's a bit more complex in the sense of what is the appropriate level of care that should be provided to a patient, what's their ceiling of care, if they have, you know, terminal cancer or a poor quality of life, they can be there to contribute to that decision-making about what their family member would want in those circumstances. So there's a lot of benefit there.
Do you think that also assists in their comprehension? I mean, you're talking about having difficult conversations with these people, and these are probably some of the hardest conversations that any of us will have with anyone. Do you think having them present and witnessing what's occurring, listening, seeing, being a part of it, do you think that assists their comprehension, which then assists your difficult conversations you have?
I think so. You know, I'm a big advocate at explaining our interventions to the family, what we're doing for the patient, and then for them to be able to then link that to something that they're seeing and observing. I think that, you know, helps you to build that trust between you and the family. And, you know, trust is everything.
Yeah, indeed.
So, Mitch, what were some of the negatives or the hesitations around family being present? What did you find in the literature with regards to that?
Yeah, so there are a lot of cons around family presence. Mostly were from a physician point of view, but I think it's important to point out that a lot of them are potential cons and not necessarily there. So some physicians would state that it imposes distractions and is a detriment to team performance and may worsen the care that's provided. This isn't really correlated in every study. Some people say that it didn't have any impact, but it's important to note. There's a lot of physicians are concerned about legal and ethical issues, say if a family member is exposed to pathogens or gets injured or anything like that. And they are really concerned about exposing a family member and increasing the likelihood of PTSD, trauma, and depression, which, as we stated before, isn't necessarily true, but it's still a concern for most physicians. Another one interesting to point out is there has been some reports of it delaying vascular access and airway access in a study by Brassel 2016, which was, again, an in-hospital arrest, and it was a study of 42,000 arrests, and it showed an increase in, delays in vascular access, medication errors, and delays in defibrillation.
That's interesting.
It was a very interesting study, and just to put some context behind it, essentially this was a retrospective observational study where they went and had a look at a large a database of cardiac arrest information that is routinely collected from hospitals, and then essentially compared all the data from hospitals that had a family present policy versus those that didn't, and wanted to see were there any differences in some of the metrics. Now, the primary outcome, and this is very important, the primary outcome for this paper was, is there a difference in ROSC rates, survival discharge, and functional neurological outcome? And they found there is no difference when family are present or not present. And that was a primary outcome. The secondary outcome looked at, were there nuances around interventions? And yes, there was some reporting of potential delays in vascular access and airway access. But essentially, this was based on potential safety issues flagged by each facility. And these were obviously subjective in nature. So it's really dependent on what they perceived to be an error. What this paper also did point out, which was quite interesting, was that there was actually more reported errors of chest compressions in the group that had no family present versus the group that had family present, which kind of goes against some of the other findings in the paper.
Family would limit the notions of distraction, detrimental patient outcomes. I mean, interestingly for me, you know, hearing this for the first time, you're saying that there was, you know, marginal, if any, difference between the outcomes of these patients, whether family was present or not.
Yeah. So 42,000 cardiac arrests, there was no statistical difference in those big ticket items, ROSC, survival to discharge, neurological outcome.
So then I guess the for me, we would need to look at is or the paramedic experience, is this an issue for them professionally? You know, do they feel like they're being watched? Do they feel like they're safe? Do they feel like they can bring the family on as stakeholders? Because if there's no statistical difference in the outcomes of the patients, we need to look at the experience of the paramedics and or the family members, you know, rates of PTSD, anxiety, or comprehension, rates of comprehension to understand what's happened. Mitch, you've been to a couple cardiac arrests now before you've even started, which is, you know, unfortunately fantastic. I know there's an oxymoron there, unfortunately fantastic, but we need to get these experiences into you. With the family present, did you feel any distractions? Did you feel there was issues about having them there, or did you expect it?
So we arrived to an arrest and we were second crew in about 5 minutes into the arrest. And there was one family member there and she was very, very distraught, quite emotional and running around and a little bit agitated as well. In terms of the way it impacted our treatment, we were quite hyper-focused on the job. And I think it actually neglected the family member's emotions to some extent. I don't think she was offered the opportunity to be part of it or to leave.
I'm intrigued to hear you even speak about you feel as part of the crew that you were all hyper-focused on the clinical aspects of the case and that the family member was somewhat neglected. Whether she'd even had the option to be present or not is interesting. Through your studentship, through your experience, through your placements, how much preparation have you had for managing cardiac arrest?
From the clinical point of view, that was almost a whole half of a semester at university. So we're very briefed on how to manage a cardiac arrest, but the emotions around the cardiac arrest and talking to a loved one, which ended up happening on the second one I went to, was not prepared for that, no.
The clinical aspects of these cases you're feeling reasonably clinically competent with. You can run the algorithms, you can run the procedures and the interventions, but now you're speaking about another whole side of managing a cardiac arrest, the emotional aspects of it, the human skills, the communication aspects of it. You're saying that you're feeling underprepared. Is that a fair statement? I know it's a leading question, but... Is that fair?
Yeah, no, it is fair. Yeah, definitely underprepared for that stuff.
The reason why I probably even just led that then myself is because reflecting on my own career, my own experience, clinically the skills are there, the capability is there, but certainly I can't remember an instance through any of the programs that I have completed. Nick, you can chime in and tell me I'm wrong, where I have been educated on how to communicate with these people and whether family members should or shouldn't be present, whether we should assume they should be, et cetera, which is probably one of the reasons why after reflecting on these recent cases, I approached you about these. Nick, what's been your experience both professionally and educationally?
You make a very good point, Steve. Like, it's one thing to walk into a classroom with a plastic mannequin on the floor and place an LMA and do some chest decompression, shock VF, and administer some medications. It's a very different beast when you're in the back of someone's home, in the patient's bedroom with their wife screaming at you. Yes, the same clinical interventions happen, but there's a whole lot of other variables at play that can influence that scene. Going back to the argument that, you know, family members shouldn't be present because they can be a distraction or create undue stress and affect the team's performance. Yes, they can be a distraction. Yes, they can be a cause stress, but I don't think that's a good enough reason to exclude them from being part of the resuscitation. What I think that shows us is that there's a gap in how we train, and maybe we need to start to include these distractions, start to include these stressors in our cardiac arrest training and build some tools on how to deal with those issues. And we're far less likely to have any perceived reduction in our performance. but we still get all those fruitful benefits with regards to how we provide care and the ongoing effects of the patient, of the family member down the track. Because I think, you know, there's a moral issue in saying that any reduction in care is the fault of the presence of a family member. Shifting the blame onto the family is not professional practice. We need to own it and say this is just the nature of our environment and figure out how we can adapt and overcome. Because, Steve, could you imagine going to a cardiac arrest and a patient's wife of 50 years is there watching you resuscitate her husband, and you say, ma'am, you need to leave. And she goes, why do I need to leave? Why should I leave? Yeah,
what are you going to do? Myself.
You're distracting me, and you know, you might cause harm to your husband. You know, what kind of response would you expect to get from that?
No, certainly it wouldn't be positive. You know, interestingly, Nick, one of the and I know you're a firm believer in students as stakeholders and students as research participants as well. It's been interesting. I've had to answer this question a number of times. Why are you interviewing students? Why are you getting students on to write papers? You know, it should be qualified paramedics. And part of the reason that we invite people like Mitch on board is because we've got some incredibly talented minds coming through the next generation paramed through higher education programs and benchmarks. And they're questioning things. And, you know, you and I both have over a decade under our belts on the street. And we're only starting to question some of these things now. And we've got people like Mitch who are not just questioning these things, they're taking things and running with it. He published a paper within a few days that's actually made you and I both really reflect on our own practice and look for ways to improve it. And I think one of the gaps that we've clearly identified here, even through Mitch's experience and our own, is that at the moment, clinically, we're educating people quite well, but in terms of professional practice, professionalism and the rest of paramedicine, there's some huge gaps here.
100%.
So I'm going to throw this out to both of you because we're going to pull a wrap in it a sec, but have we got a solution to this conversation?
Mitch?
It sounded like you came upon it just then, Sonny. I think education is always at the forefront of pretty much every issue with paramedicine almost. More consideration and more kind of focus on, you know, patient and family-centered care, using the people around you as resources and trying to get them involved, encouraged and supported through that process. I think at the end of the day, the family members should be offered that opportunity. If they want to leave, then that's a choice as well. If they want to be part of it, then they shouldn't be stopped. Still to this day, though, people don't see it that way. There's always going to be a situation where having the family member involved may be like detrimental to performance. I haven't come across it yet, but someone probably has. And those situations are going to have to be assessed individually. But we know that there's benefits to having them involved and there's potential negatives to having them involved, but the benefits from my perspective far outweigh the potential negatives.
You made a very good point there, Mitch. I reflect back on my own practice and I don't think I ever really explicitly asked, would you like to be involved? You know, you kind of allow the family to dictate that for themselves, but you're a guest in their home, being trusted to try and make sense of a really horrible situation. People are going to respond to that situation in a very different way. Some people will be calm, some will be angry, some will scream, some will cry. They're normal human emotions, and it's reasonable to have those kinds of responses to a situation like a cardiac arrest. So, you know, when we go into these people's homes and, you know, they're very emotive and challenging, well, it's a normal part of our environment. And if we start to realize that that's the environment that we operate in, then that's the standard that we should be training for. We need to start to bridge the gap between, you know, skills training, the classic classroom mentality, to trying to incorporate all the aspects of the world that we work in. It's not cheap, it's not easy, but that's where we need to go.
I think as a professional organisation, as a professional industry, we need to work to bridge that gap. But as a professional person, every situation is different, hey? You've got to develop relationships rapidly on scene. We need to read the environments we're in, and we need to adapt and overcome those. It's that's a huge challenge, but I guess that's where we're at for now. Folks, I think that's a wrap. That's the Shift Extension Paramedic podcast for another day. Hey, Mitch, thanks so much for being with us today.
Honestly, yeah, it's been great. Thanks for having me on, boys, and having the opportunity to write this article.
Thanks, Mitch, for coming on. I really appreciate it, mate. Steve, it's always a pleasure, and we'll see you all next time.